fellow Garden Planeteers. Welcome to Garden Planet.
Welcome, everyone.
You're with Karen and Selena today, the usual suspects. So today, given the whole pandemic crises, there seems to be so many crises. we'll focus on that one today. I just wanted to touch base on some natural viral remedies. Well, actually, the lack of.
Okay.
It's very hard, actually, to find a viral remedy because viruses are that sneaky and clever, which is why
they
hurt people and kill people. So I'm going to bring it way back. Obviously, this coronavirus was introduced into the country.
Yes.
And I thought it was really interesting because that's exactly what happened when the settlers brought their germs, viruses, whatever, infectious,
into
Aotearoa back in the 1800s. And often these pandemics, I don't know, it's probably a no-brainer to most, but I've never thought about it because I've never had to, and I'm just one of those personalities that won't, mm-hmm. unless it affects them, which it certainly has now.
Yes.
And when I've done some research and talked to people, they come about through, and this was way back into the days of the plague, through international travel.
Yes.
Today, airplanes are the major culprit.
Then,
but in those days, it was ships.
Ships, yes.
So, Selena's going to talk about some of the issues with immunity that were occurred on ships, because even though we say, oh, you know, these, whether they're water ships or airships, you know, they had their challenges within the carrier. So she's going to touch a bit on that, and I'm going to talk about some of the Maori health issues and herbs that they used in that time to help them with their issues of immunity and infection and stuff.
Good one.
So, oh, and you're also going to, well, I'm going to leave the plant of the week a mystery at this stage.
That's in my hands. Yep.
Keep the listeners, you know, on the edge of their seats. Hang in there and you'll find out, guys. So let's get started. Shall we take it way back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Way, way back.
To the 1800s, disease in Aotearoa. As the Europeans began to arrive in New Zealand, so unfortunately did their diseases, which included the likes of hepatitis, ringworm, leprosy.
Oh,
tuberculosis. I didn't realise, I guess, well, I do now that I've researched. The Maori people didn't have a lot of respiratory type illness. It was a lot more sort of skin, surface infection.
Yeah, well, the air was quite fresh and clean back then.
Yeah. And also strains of staphylococci and streptococci, just to name a few, that came along with the European people. Historian Geoffrey Rice suggests that the higher death rate among Maori, more than eight times for those compared to those of Pākehā during the 1918 influenza.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a lot more deaths. And they, Geoffrey Rice, according to his, well, epidemiology awareness, and there'd be other people that agree with this, say this is, may have resulted from lower immunity due to their prior isolation from infectious disease, as Maori were a largely rural population.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only that, I don't think it's only the fact that they lived more distantly, but they were isolated as well.
Yeah.
So the main diseases that were coming before the European were from, you know, the wokas and what do they call those Polynesian rafts that would come over, and they were often tropical diseases and were short lived, so they didn't make it to the land.
Things like malaria and.
Whereas a lot of our viral diseases and these have a longer incubation time, so that voyage, if you made it.
Yes. It would have killed them off before they got here.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas these other ones were able to last the distance.
Mm.
And of course, they had a lot more people crammed into these ships. I mean, I think of my settlers that arrived in 1860. It's when you read the notes, it's just,
they went,
you
cramps.
Know, I'm lucky to be here. You know, they just used to, call them coffin ships because they'd be so, especially among the younger ones and babies.
Yes. Well, it would seem that you were lucky if half of them made it.
Yeah. So they were, suffered as well themselves from this disease. And interestingly, according to Maori and whalers alike, the impact of disease actually led to the establishment of the whaling stations that we find, well, not the historical sites now, around New Zealand. And what this had been initially opposed by the local Maori, but because they no longer had the strength or numbers to fight because of the disease, the whole resistance just, came to an end. And that's how these whaling stations came about. And that was not so much due to them shooting off the Maori and saying, get away, we're going to whale. It was because the Maori were dying and ill and weak.
Not able to.
The white men and the Maori alike that were able to recall this said that's what happened.
Mm.
Interestingly, venereal disease was prevalent by the 1830s. Okay.
Yeah.
Especially syphilis.
Yeah.
It is thought the disease was first introduced by the early French and English explorers. The disease appears to have affected Maori women more than men because of the sex industry, although a number of methods were used which reduced the incidence of disease, regardless of whether these methods were used deliberately or not, such as abortion. So if a wahine became pregnant, they would come up with whatever herbs they used to abort fetuses and also in doing so killed, I think syphilis is bacterial, I'm not sure, but it seemed to
stop the spread.
Stop that as well and among other things, because it's pretty heavy herbs they would have been using. And there were also reports of vapour baths of steamed herbs used to alleviate symptoms. So they were using what the knowledge they had to help them through this time. So some interesting little history there. Did you find something regards...
Yes, there's a lot of things I found. Regarding the vapour baths...
Yeah.
So quite common in my research was that kawakawa was probably the best for inhaling and in general bathing and for all sorts of ailments.
Kawakawa, common name, Maori pepper tree.
Yes.
It was steamed, the leaves were steamed, not only for VD, but chest congestion as well.
Yeah.
Hmm. It had kawakawa, it's like you said to me the other day, was like the, it's kind of, I guess we use Panadol for things.
The cure all.
Yes.
And it was readily available. You just go in the bush and it's there.
Toothaches, kidney and bowel stimulation, wounds, bandaging, boils, VD, arthritis, dysentery.
All sorts of things.
All sorts. So have you got a kawakawa in your garden?
Well, my garden isn't shady enough for...
Yeah, they like a corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would like one, but we're finding a spot where it can flourish is a bit of a challenge for me.
And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think I'd rather have a drier, sunny property than a dark, shady property. Having lived in the bush before, it's a bit of a hassle.
But then I can go to the reserve and I might find... little stands there, so it wouldn't be too far away that I could go and
It's everywhere.
Scavenge. I mean, not scavenge, forage.
And, you know, every good, bush needs a good trimming.
Yes.
So they don't mind.
No.
I grab, before mine started taking root, I used to just grab the whole, not the whole plant, but, Some was growing out the back of PJ's house. I said, oh, can I grab some of that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I came back with like a whole branch. There were still roots attached.
Gosh.
But there was so much there. This kawakawa was, it was thick. They get quite big. Yeah, and so she's, oh my gosh, that's just like you, Karen, isn't it? Most people would just take a few leaves.
Oh,
I'll take that.
Touching on that, Karen, the Maori way is not to take the whole lot.
I didn't take the whole lot.
Okay.
It's still there, I promise. I wouldn't do that.
And they would traditionally have a karakia.
It's interesting you mention that because I was going to talk about rongoā.
Yes.
And how they... But shall I touch on that later after you've talked about the dramas that the Europeans went through?
So in my research, I was reading all about Tupaia, the Tahitian navigator who joined Captain Cook on his endeavoured rediscovery of New Zealand.
Endeavouring around the place.
He had another boy with him, a younger boy. His name was Taihata, I think. Yeah. The two T's I get confused.
Yeah, a lot of T's.
And so those two men, or two of them from Tahiti, and they were able to communicate with the Maori because the languages were quite similar.
Yes.
So I think if he had not jumped along... or stowed away. Well, no, he was invited, actually. Our history might have been very different.
Oh, so yeah, he could have played a key role in that communication between the explorers and the Maori people.
Yes, and he did help Captain Cook navigate or advise him on where to go.
Yeah.
Although he didn't have the huge influence, but I think in little matters like that, you know, go left a bit, right a bit. No.
Well, maybe just understanding, how the islands.
Yes.
I don't know if they, it seems like a. I mean, I've been to Europe. I'm not an expert on sailing by any means, but the waters do seem very different here to there, even the colour.
So he would have known by the stars and the currents and just the tradition, because the Tahitians, of course, were experts at
navigation and
Anyway, so he joined the ship, and so Captain Cook came to New Zealand in a roundabout way, and he landed or visited Tahiti first, so he's coming from that side.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why he stopped off there was not only to chart everything, but Tahiti had lots of fruit and fresh water, because on those long, long voyages they would run out of food.
Mm.
So they really needed that fresh water and fruit and fresh meat to survive. If they didn't stop anywhere and land anywhere, they had to rely on what they stored in the ship. And so that would, of course, go off pretty soon after a couple of months sailing.
Yeah.
And so what I learned is Captain Cook is quite renowned for his crew not getting scurvy.
Oh, really?
It's always said in the history books that no one died on his ship, but... that's not actually true. Technically, yes.
There was a death or
two. There was a couple of deaths. What he did was to prevent the deaths.
That's still pretty good, though. Like, it sounds like he, you know, you would want to be on Captain Cook's ship.
Yeah. To prevent the illnesses, he would...
He hand sanitised.
No, well, he could have. He kept a tight ship. He kept it nice and clean. But also he made his crew eat their veggies.
Mm.
And malt, apparently.
Oh, malt?
Yes.
Ah, because there's lots of minerals in malt.
And
so they would have been getting their vitamins from all the fresh produce. So he'd make special sort of... dispensations in his journey, like to Tahiti, which was a good move by the sounds, to, ensure that his crew had fresh supply of
Yeah, fruit and veggies. So he would trade nails with the Tahitians to get the fresh food.
Yeah.
Because he knew that if they didn't get it, then...
Yeah, well, that's right.
They might be sick.
It's not... you can't run a ship without your crew.
He also made them eat sauerkraut, which...
It's supposed to be...
Is fermented cabbage.
Yeah, but it's supposed to have all these, like...
Yes.
Micro, like good ones.
Yeah, antioxidants, antibacterial.
Yeah.
And another thing.
Good old cabbage, eh?
But they knew by then that citrus fruit, for example, oranges and lemons, were also good to prevent.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because without all that scientific research that we have today, that researches vitamin C, ascorbic acid.
Yep.
And it's, you know, how it. Interrelates with all our cells and all the good things it does. They didn't have any of that. They didn't even have... Did they have microscopes in those days?
No, they didn't know. They had all these ideas.
This innate knowledge or knowing. Oh, when I have that, I feel good. And I feel the same way because I'm not actually a big fan of fruit and veggies. I'd much rather just have a pie and a chocolate bar. Like, I don't know. But then my body tells me I need this. And often when you have it, you're like, oh, that tastes good.
Yes.
That's what I needed. You know, you can feel the goodness. And that's probably what they...
Yes. So scientists have found out that, yes, it is vitamin C that is the essential thing that humans need, ascorbic acid, because we can't generate it ourselves. Now, other animals can, but humans can't. We need it from fresh food.
Yeah.
Not just fresh veggies and fruit, but also fresh meat. It has to be fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just live on chocolate and chips.
But, like, in terms of the fresh meat, are you talking, like, raw meat?
No, just fresh meat.
Yeah.
Like it could be seafood or...
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have those minerals and vitamins in it.
Yeah.
So not sort of preserved
or
meat.
Or frozen for too long or cooked for too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So on ships that were sailing for months at a time, there was a lot of danger that they would run short of food and eventually scurvy will show up, which...
Was that one of the first... sort of signs that...
So it would show up after maybe a few 4 weeks of not having any fresh...
Isn't that interesting?
Food. And so the symptoms of scurvy are bleeding gums, and then any wounds that you have will not be healing, and they'll be opening up again, and then you'd have general weakness, and then
that
you can eventually
terrible.
Die of it. It's horrible.
Stuck on a ship, your gums are sore...
Yeah.
Your wounds are seeping and you're stuck on a ship with stinking men and rum drinking. What a nightmare.
No good. So the essential thing was to go somewhere where there was fresh water and food available. So they loved coming to New Zealand because the Maoris would want to share some food, but they kind of, their first encounters weren't always great.
Yeah.
They had to negotiate.
As soon as they put feet on land, their very first thoughts would have been food and water.
Yeah.
And then, oh, we've got a tribe.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
they probably just wouldn't have had any energy to even think about fighting, but I suppose the cannons would have helped out a bit with that.
Their shooting sticks, the Maori called them. They didn't know what they were at first, but they were quite keen to have them.
Oh, their guns, yeah. But I think their ships, did they have cannons on the front that they used to blow?
I'm not sure about the Endeavour, but
I don't know.
In those days, yes, they had
I wonder if they used them much.
But at the time, it was muskets.
Obviously the most... practical thing when you're hunting through the bush
nails were also a trading
nails seem
thing.
To be a common theme here, and you can't live without good nails.
Well, the Maoris didn't have any nails and they wondered what they were, but apparently they're very useful for putting houses together.
Yeah, they certainly are.
So
and
they traded so much nails that the ship nearly fell apart.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh. Gosh. That's so weird.
Nails for food.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, guys. We can't actually go anywhere. Yeah, the ship's fallen apart now. But we can give you the wood.
Now, Topaya was a bit stubborn, though, because he didn't like the sauerkraut that they offered on the ship. It didn't taste very good to him.
Yeah.
So he refused to eat it. And then...
Did he get whipped for it?
No, because he was a guest on the ship. The other men would have got whipped. But yeah. He didn't...
Eat your vegetables!
So... The sad thing that happened, Topaya didn't make it to Great Britain where they were going to end up and died 7 months after he...
Of malnutrition?
Of scurvy.
Oh, you're joking.
No.
Wow.
And that is not in a lot of history books.
No, that's so sad.
Yeah, they,
so you can end up dying from it.
Yeah, he got very weak.
And was, just a, probably just infection.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And also his boy that was along with him also died.
Oh, that's terrible.
No.
Should have eaten the sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Very interesting, Selena.
Karen, can I share with you the top vitamin C veggies and fruit?
We've got to get plant of the week in.
Yes.
And if we've got time, I'll touch on a little bit of the rongoa herbal remedy practice. Okay. So
it's only a short list.
Make it a short list.
So
I don't want to miss out on the plant of the week.
Of course. So citrus fruit, yes, oranges and lemons. They used to call...
Is this in descending order? So the most potent at the top?
No, and the most common, and I've circled the most, the top most... Like more bang for your buck.
Right. Cool.
Citrus fruit. They used to call sailors limeys because they needed lime. They gave them lime juice to drink every day as their rations. And that is full of vitamin C. It had to be fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh limes, fresh oranges. Red peppers, broccoli, potatoes.
Okay.
Kiwi fruit. Now, kiwi fruit I've circled because that has more vitamin content, vitamin C content than
oranges. Yeah, I'd believe that.
Like the top one.
Wow.
And also potatoes are the top.
What? But you don't eat them raw, though. You'd have to eat them raw.
No, you eat them cooked or you...
And the okay.
Yeah. And then parsley.
Oh, yes. That's right.
So if you have parsley as a garnish on all your food, then you're getting your vitamin C.
I love parsley and I love kiwi fruit, so I'm liking this.
So, yep, that's my list.
That's awesome. Well, shall we get into plant of week and then if we have time, I'll just give the listeners a couple of steps if they want to give the herbal remedy thing a go.
Okay. So plant of the week.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia in an onion patch.
An onion patch.
Now, our plant of the week, coming out of lockdown, is blossoming and blooming right now. And I've noticed it around in my garden. I don't know if you have one, Karen, but the lovely magnolia.
Oh, a few of my neighbours have it, so I see it, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
So the beauty of this plant, it's a tree, or it can be a little shrub, but it's more of a tree, is that when the leaves drop, then the buds come out, they're just glorious and it's covered in flowers.
Quite an interesting one, eh? Seeing just like that, just the flowers like that are really quite distinct.
Yeah.
Even Pierre, my partner, for those of you wondering, even he's like, oh, that's a magnolia.
Yeah.
He doesn't know any plants.
Gorgeous.
He knows that, so it's lovely.
It's sort of like tulips, but on a tree.
Yeah. And the colour's lovely too, that sort of pinky, purpley. Lilac-y.
Crimson-y. So there's lots of different kinds of magnolias. The most common ones are the deciduous ones with the flowers, but you can also get evergreen ones, which in America they have in the southern states.
Oh,
that's
why
they call it moonlight and magnolias or steel magnolias.
They do talk about magnolias a lot, the Americans, don't they?
That's a different kind of species, not species, cultivar or type. They call it Magnolia grandiflora.
Okay.
It's a huge flower. And their flowers are white and they're kind of lemony scented.
Oh.
And that,
it sounds like almost a completely different plant.
But because the flowers are so huge and they go by the type of flower and how many, what it looks like. So they've put it in the same category.
Right.
Okay, so, but then our beautiful ones that are deciduous, then they have cultivars like Magnolia soulangea, which is the one I have in my garden, and Magnolia campbelli. So they're all named after botanists. So Magnolia was named after the French botanist Pierre Magnol.
Right.
Who was French. But what I was interested in with the magnolia was the medicinal one. Well, it's this Magnolia officinalis.
Oh, right. Okay.
Anything with officinalis after its name means it's medicinal.
Yes.
So this one, its common name is Hopol Magnolia, comes from China.
Mm.
And what they use that one for is its bark, which has antioxidant properties. So it's used for asthma, anxiety.
So they boil up the bark?
Yep, depression. So you use it in Chinese medicine.
Okay.
Stops inflammation and stomach disorders.
Oh, interesting.
All around anti-aging.
So it's available? If I Googled it?
You could Google it.
You'd be able to find some magnolia capsules or something.
Yeah, but I would say it's better use it in a tincture to get all the plant in, like the actual bark, rather than mash it up and put it in a pill. You know, people try to make a buck out of all these plants and put them into pills.
Yeah.
But if you can
get them. I'm just being lazy. Like, if I don't... My hours have gone up, Selena.
Oh, okay.
I don't have time to grind herbs anymore.
Okay.
you can do it for me.
This one is not so common in the garden centres. I'm not sure if they've seen the Magnolia officinalis, but it is a type of magnolia.
Yeah, I'm going to have a look out for that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because...
Is it as pretty as the...
Well, the bark is, you can strip it off, whereas the other magnolia's bark doesn't seem to have that property.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't destroy your other magnolias to get the bark.
Okay,
sorry.
Don't do that.
And Chinese, we know the coronavirus first came about in China. So they were using the magnolia bark as recovery for coronavirus victims.
Oh, cool.
As their medicine.
Oh, yeah, it's
just
a very
to help
relevant
them get over all the,
herb.
Yeah. So, that's magnolia. Now, if you're growing a magnolia, they like acid soil and kind of a heavy soil. They don't like lime and too light, fluffy soil.
Oh, okay.
So they actually grow very well in New Zealand conditions.
They do.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thanks for that, Selena. So we've got only a couple of minutes left.
Yep.
All right, guys, I'll just run down if you want to get out there and look for some Maori herbs in the bush.
Yeah.
Three things to remember.
Yep.
Okay. First is you touched on this, Selena, appropriate tikanga must be observed during collection, preparation and storage of rongoa herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two, plant material must be correctly identified, gathered from non-polluted areas and prepared safely and hygienically. These are all written steps in the rongoa method. And three, plant remedies should only be prescribed and dispensed by tohunga, which are healers.
Okay.
Yep. So I think I'm pretty much doing... Yeah, I'm failing that because I just prescribe things to myself. I'm not approaching a tohunga.
We can ask Joanne about
this.
Yes,
we will.
Our resident tohunga.
Yeah. So if there's anyone you know, but they're few and far between these days. So maybe Google's probably or a good book or I'm sure we could find someone or something that can help us with that information.
Thanks, Karen. Well, that's all we have time for.
Oh.
Happy gardening, everyone.
See you later, guys. See you next week.